Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you so much for joining us on the Texas Scorecard Friday Roundup. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard, and this is, of course, the show where we take a look at what the big story or big stories were for the week. There's, you know, the big story of the week, right? It was hard to miss. In Dallas, of course, you had Dallas salon owner Luther jailed and then released from jail. And our Metroplex correspondent, Robert Montoya, was there the entire way. Robert, this is a story you've been following now for a couple weeks, ever since Shelley opened the doors to her salon, and a lot of action in that case this week.
Yes, Brandon, a lot of action. And this has been, for Shelley, you can tell, an emotional roller coaster. First, when she first opened her salon, she got a citation for her being open. Then Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins slapped her with a cease and desist order. Then the city of Dallas sought a temporary restraining order against her, just slap after slap after slap. And she said, "I'm not going to close my salon." And for that, she was, you know, she was thrown in prison for violating the temporary restraining order. And then yesterday, thanks to the intervention of the Texas Supreme Court, she was released to people who were so thankful for her, cheering her on. And it was just emotional just seeing her cry at everyone supporting her.
Yeah, so she was originally sentenced for 7 days in jail with about $7,000 in fines. And then a lot of action yesterday morning. In fact, you saw some national outlets, however, get this story wrong, which is somewhat to be expected. They're not in Texas. But, you know, you see a headline on Fox News that Governor Greg Abbott was able to release her from her jail time. But that's not exactly what happened, was it?
No, it wasn't. Governor Greg Abbott did that very morning that Shelley was released, sent out a press release saying that he had retroactively changed his executive orders so that no one could be thrown in prison for reopening salons early. But, you know, I asked her attorney, Warren Norrod, at a press conference he gave before Shelley came out, and he said that he doesn't know, but he doesn't believe that actually helped her get out. What actually got her out was the intervention of the Texas Supreme Court granting Warren Norrod's file for, I believe it's called writ of habeas corpus, and told her to get out. And the city of Dallas has until Monday at 4 p.m. to file their argument in opposition to Nord's argument in favor of Shelley.
Right. So it doesn't mean that necessarily she's free and clear. But, you know, if you had to bet and look at the way these things are going, probably not going to be putting her back in jail there. This was something that this Dallas judge, Eric Moyer, really bungled actually from the start, as far as not allowing her bail, not following the process, and ultimately really he was responsible for it. But going back to that Governor Abbott order, you know, like I said, there was some talk that this would have applied to that case, but you look at folks like State Representative Matt Rinaldi and even what you said, her lawyer Warren Norrod said, and she wasn't exactly jailed. It's kind of complicated, but the reason she was in jail is for contempt of the court, not necessarily for violating the state's executive order.
Exactly right. And it's very interesting. If you look at the timeline of events that very day she was released, it's interesting. First, you have Governor Abbott saying, "I'm retroactively changing my executive order." Then an hour later, you have the Texas Supreme Court stepping in saying, "Let her go." And then not too long later, you've got Abbott at a press conference with President Donald Trump, where he says, you know, Abbott says, you know, no one should be put in prison for this. And then President Trump himself asks Abbott if what he did applies to Ms. Luther. And Abbott said, "She's free now," to which Trump said, "Good," which kind of makes you wonder. I mean, just looking at appearances, I have no idea, but I wonder, was there involvement of President Trump in on us as well? I don't know. It just has this weird appearance.
But it's certainly a story that has taken a national turn. I mean, this is something that has made, like you said, its way all to the White House. And Shelley Luther giving some short comments when she was released. You had a rally a few days ago while she was jailed, people urging Governor Abbott to intervene, to pardon her, or for her otherwise to be freed from jail. Now it looks like there's another rally set for this Saturday as well.
Yes, there is. There's another rally. There's going to be a number of speakers like activists like Eugene Ralph, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, and tentatively, last I heard, Shelley Luther is scheduled to be there, but there's now been recently some questions as to whether or not she'll actually be able to make it. We don't know yet. As soon as we have confirmation, if that has changed, we will let you know.
Excellent. We'll be following you for thank you so much, Robert, for joining.
Thank you, Brandon.
Switching gears a little bit, we've got this Chinese coronavirus. People are going to jail for cutting hair, but some things stay the same. And those elections are still on the calendar, specifically the runoff elections. Originally scheduled for May, the runoff elections were delayed in response to the coronavirus to July 14th. You've got a number of campaigns out in limbo, but as we sort of try to refresh folks on what is happening from an electoral standpoint, myself and Carrie Cheshire have been working on a series of runoff reviews, the last ones being posted today at texasscorecard.com, of the state legislative races. And I wanted to ask you, Carrie, you know, we kind of run through some of these real quick. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of these races across the state where runoffs are happening. And a couple of those are with incumbents, Dan Flynn and J.D. Sheffield, which is not a good position for an incumbent.
Well, that's right, Brandon. You know, I don't know what the exact statistic is, but it's something like it's been 30 years or so since the last member of the Texas legislature, an incumbent member of the Texas legislature, went to a runoff and survived. And of course, you know, the logic kind of tells you that, right? A majority of their constituents said, hey, we want somebody else to represent us in the primary. So you should kind of expect that to continue in the runoff election. So it looks pretty bad for Dan Flynn, a lawmaker who came in as a conservative and then quickly kind of soured and became one of the more liberal members, one of the few who was out actively defending Dennis Bonin. I'm in the midst of the whole scandal. And then J.D. Sheffield, a guy who was a liberal Republican from the get-go, literally came in with Democrat crossover votes to beat Sid Miller. Now in the fight of his life against Shelby Slauson, someone who actually outperformed him in the March election. So I think Shelby Slauson is like kind of a definite lock. And Brian Slayton is a very probable win. So that's two likely victories for conservatives right there.
Yeah, of course, people need to get out and vote. Nothing set in stone. But I mean, even specifically, when you look at J.D. Sheffield, I think just off the top of my head, he was only able to get about 30% of the vote. So not a good place for an incumbent to be. You've also got some open races. You've got one with pretty big retirement, right? The retirement of House Speaker Dennis Bonin. Now you've got two candidates aiming to replace him. That's Robin Garrett and Cody Bassoot. What do we know about those folks?
So that's a really interesting race, Brandon, because there we're actually seeing two candidates who have deep roots in the district and in elected office. So Cody Bassoot's dad's been a JP for nearly 20 years right there, and he was elected to the Angleton City Council. Robin Garrett has been the tax assessor collector for nearly 20 years herself. So these are two candidates with some serious political chops and experience running against each other. They actually even live in the same voting precinct. So it's a very interesting race right there. Vasut kind of trying to establish himself as the more conservative candidate in the race, speaking about constitutional carry and taxpayer-funded lobbying. But he's not like a traditional conservative candidate. Like, you don't see this guy as this guy's another Matt Rinaldi. He looks more like maybe another could be a Terry Wilson if you were to come to Texas House versus Robin Garrett is a very establishment individual. She's talked about what she's done advocating for conservative policies as the head of the tax assessor collector organization. Well, that's not really anything. The last stuff that was passed that was pro-taxpayer dealing property taxes was Senate Bill 2, which the Tax Assessor Collector Association actually fought against and then later was kind of neutral on. So kind of a known, not so good commodity there and a hopeful commodity in Cody Bassoot.
Mm-hmm. Over in Fort Bend County, you've got the retirement of Rick Miller after his clumsy comments. Now sees a runoff between J.C. Jetton and Matt Morgan. J.C. Jetton, sort of the favorite, especially when it comes to endorsements and cash, but actually came in second going to this runoff to Matt Morgan, who just about won it outright. So you've got that race as well. You've got in Central Texas, you got a couple races here, actually, especially in Central Texas, to replace some Democrats that took Republican seats in the last cycle. The first of those, you've written about both of those. One, you've got Bud Wymore and Kerry Isaac running to replace Aaron Zwiener, one of the most liberal Democrats. And you've got Justin Berry and Jennifer Fleck facing off to take back Travis County's only ostensibly Republican seat. What do we know about those races?
Well, you're right, Brennan. These are seats that were held by Republicans but were lost in the Beto O'Rourke election. In the case of 45, which is kind of Blanco County in favor of Democrats, that really flipped that seat. And then in 47, which was Paul Workman, you saw that just, you know, an overwhelming turnout for Democrats swamped those. So in 45, you've got Kerry Isaac, the wife of former state representative Jason Isaac, running for that seat. Herself embattled for a number of ethical issues on using money from her campaign for weird purposes, renting a house in Austin, even though her house in Dripping Springs is only a couple miles away, and running a charity that ostensibly helps veterans, but there's not very much evidence in that way. She's characterized all those things as liberal media attacks. But, you know, Republicans are talking about that, too. Meanwhile, Bud Wymore, not a conservative record as Hays County GOP chair, and then a guy who sued three gun ranges. Now, he maintains that's a property rights case, but gun rights activists disagree with that. And you've seen a lot of gun rights folks rally around Kerry Isaac. Up in Austin, you've got Jennifer Fleck versus Justin Berry. Jennifer Fleck, an attorney and activist who's been pretty well known among the Texas Capitol on family issues. And Justin Berry, an active police officer, 12-year police veteran, and member of the police union. I think Jennifer Fleck is trying to run a more conservative campaign, and Berry is trying to run a more moderate campaign in the Texas Capitol.
Yeah, certainly what we've seen there. And I will say, to that point, looking at that race, I think Jennifer Fleck's finish in that race, she came in first, I think, in the primary, or led the field, really shows the importance of going door to door. This is somebody who has been out there since I think the legislature was even still in session. So it really shows actually the importance of those contacts. The last one, but certainly not least, a runoff race that we're going to be posting about today is the race to replace State Representative Mike Lang, which actually sees a pretty clear contrast as far as these races go between establishment and conservative.
Yeah, on the conservative side, you have John Francis, who is a clear-cut conservative activist, been active for a very long time, been active nationally with issues like Live Action and PragerU, being a real conservative leader and really fighting for the values of the district. Then you've got Glenn Rogers, a guy who had to move in to run. Granted, it was from Aledo, which isn't all that far, but he did have to move into the district to run. And he's very much an establishment guy. He's a guy who was against constitutional carry, then said he's for constitutional carry if you require training, which isn't constitutional carry. Then he was for taxpayer-funded lobbying, saying that we need to allow cities and counties to do it. Then he's against it, but says that we ought to allow it in some cases, which is actually most cases. Just a really ornery guy who has the audacity to try to lie to the people that he's trying to represent. A really kind of pernicious and nasty character there in Glenn Rogers, and hopefully someone that voters reject at the polls. What is it, July 14th, Brandon?
July 14th. That's right. Very clear contrast there. Like I said, we've got all those race reviews up at texasscorecard.com. We'll also be recapping them in the Texas Minute. If you're not subscribed to that email, suggest you do that. Thank you, Kerry, for joining me to talk about those.
Thanks, Brandon.
As we look at going back to Dallas and the case of Shelley Luther, this was certainly an example of a grassroots victory. And so today's heroes have to be the rallying Texans who have showed up physically, if it meant rallying outside the courthouse where she was being held, or even sending petitions. You had thousands of folks contacting the governor, contacting their lawmakers, and urging her release. Obviously, folks took notice, and Shelley Luther is walking free right now. And so a big, big victory for our heroes, which are our rallying Texans. For today's half-wit, we got to go back. And if you saw this, Governor Greg Abbott's strike force to reopen Texas laid out its plans about a week ago, which basically portrayed that most businesses need to remain closed and even without a certain timeline. Meanwhile, at the top of it, you've got Chairman James Huffines, who was put on the board to lead it, possibly as a retributory action against his brother's criticism of Abbott's response. But now James is in the position of being the face of this task force, even as businesses remain closed and remain in a position where it is, unfortunately, the face of that task force. So today's Halfwit has to be James Huffines.
Thank you for listening to this week's Friday Roundup from Texas Scorecard. Remember, you can head to the Empower Texans Facebook page at 11 a.m. every Friday to watch the show live and get your questions in.